Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hi there. Welcome to The Dr. Nina Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, and I am here to help you stop counting calories, carbs, and fat grams so you can easily get to a healthy weight and get on with your life. And during this time of quarantine and coronavirus anxiety, I am also here to help you deal with whatever is eating at you and weighing on you, which is considerable. If you want to join me, the number here to reach me is 818-602-4929, 818-602-4929. You will likely talk to my wonderful engineer, Ronan, who's doing a spectacular job of putting this radio show together from his house to my house instead of usually we're all in the studio together, and somehow he's making it work. 818-602-4929, because I would love to hear what is on your mind, what is weighing on you, because the real problem with binge eating, stress eating, any kind of compulsive eating is not food. The real problem is not food. The real problem is what is eating at you. So today is Earth Day and my birthday. That's a good thing. I'm very happy to be here with you. I'm happy to be here, healthy and well, and being able to be with my family and to connect with my friends. Thank goodness this is happening at a time when we can see each other over Zoom or FaceTime or Skype and stay connected. But it's also a sad day because some of you who have been listening know that someone that I cared about very deeply had been in the hospital with COVID-19 and fighting for her life. And unfortunately, she lost that battle and passed away last week. So that really brought home the reality of this. I mean, obviously, I knew this was real, and I felt the gravity of it, and found it to be terrifying. And was glad that I live in a state that said, "Hey, stay safer at home," right away. But it just brought home the pain and the personal grief of this kind of loss and what is happening to all of us at this time. So I've been thinking a lot about grief. And of course, if you're not able to grieve, food is soothing, food is comforting, food is something that we turn to when we're sad, or to reward ourselves in different times. But right now, it's a lot of stress eating, a lot of comfort eating, a lot of cookie baking is happening. And I wanted to share with you a couple of articles, because these people put into words far better than I could the phenomenon of grief. The first article is called "Trouble Focusing, Not Sleeping, You May Be Grieving." It's by R.O. Kwan. She is a novelist. She writes, "It's normal and natural to not be able to just go on as usual. I couldn't understand at first," she said. She couldn't understand why she was having so much trouble writing. In early March, following the advice of public health experts, her husband and she had isolated themselves with his septuagenarian parents, thinking that they could help them. At the end of each quiet day, she sat buzzing with terror, but strangely listless, having accomplished very little. Until recently, she had traveled a lot for work. Since publishing her first novel, she'd been on the road for speaking, teaching, and other book-related gigs. But now the speaking gigs were all canceled or postponed. Her teaching had moved online. She was home. She had nowhere else to go. She had a novel deadline coming up. For so long, in planes, trains, and cars, she'd wished to have an uninterrupted stretch in one place where she could really focus on her writing. And now, well, look, she had it, but she couldn't focus. What's more, news aside, she could barely read. Instead, she ate an unusually large quantity of salt and vinegar chips. She was exhausted, but she slept badly, intermittently. She cried. Long-held desires and goals felt hazy, at times irrelevant. The days blurred together. Deadlines pressed close. She couldn't fully recall why she'd ever cared so much about books, about words. Other people who couldn't stay home were going to work every day, many without the option, the privilege of doing otherwise. Well, here she was home, and she couldn't, of all things, write. Yes, there's a pandemic, and yes, she felt by turns anxious, furious, and terrified, but it was 2020 in America, and she'd felt quite anxious, furious, and terrified for a while. The inability to work, though, was new. And then it occurred to her, as she ate another astringent chip, that this lassitude, this trouble focusing, the sleep difficulties, the exhaustion. Oh, yes, she thought, she remembers this. She was grieving. She was grieving in early March, and she is still grieving now. And the chances are, you are too. Consider how much has been lost and how much we're likely to lose. The lives already taken by the coronavirus, along with the lives currently in jeopardy, and exponentially more people falling ill every day. The lost livelihoods, the blasted plans, entire families destitute today who are getting by 3 weeks ago. Upended routines, postponed weddings and funerals, depleted savings, isolation. The quickly rising anti-Asian racism, stoked by a cowardly president trying to distract this country from his own negligence. Politicians arguing that our elders should die for the sake of the economy. The exhausted grief of those who already knew full well how hard it can be to be American and marginalized. Jobs vanishing, the jeopardized local businesses, restaurants, bookstores that make a place a home. Whole cities are changing fast. The whole world, it seems, is changing, and there's that to grieve too. She could go on. The list is long. There's grief of want and grief of cold, a sort they call despair, wrote Emily Dickinson, who knew a thing or two about loss. Does any of this sound familiar to you? And if so, do you know what to do? She didn't, not really, so she asked an expert, Megan Devine, psychotherapist and author of It's Okay That You're Not Okay. Devine points out how relatively unfamiliar we are in the U.S. to talking about this kind of life-changing pain. As a culture, we don't talk about grief. We don't make space for sadness. Now everyone is carrying grief, she believes, but because many Americans weren't talking about grief before the pandemic, we don't know how to name it, let alone voice it. And I would say, let alone deal with it. And that's where food comes in often. Food can numb the grief. Getting back to the article, that silence can result in what Ms. Devine calls epidemics of unspoken grief. Everybody's got grief they're carrying around, but they never get to say it. It doesn't go away if you don't get to say it. It comes out in epidemics of suicidality, depression, social isolation, loneliness. More loneliness even than what we're already experiencing, Ms. Devine says. This is, of course, part of the especial cruelty of this pandemic. How it isolates us at a time when grieving, afraid, we might crave fellowship. This is when we need to connect with other people, she says. But how to find true, deep connection when we can't so much touch anyone we're not already living with? I'm going to pause there because Nicole has just joined us.
Sorry.
Hi, Nicole.
How are you?
I don't hear Nicole.
Can you hear me? How are you? Hello?
Nicole, are you there? She's messaging that she can't hear. And Ronan, can you please call her?
Hello?
Hopefully Ronan, can you call her? I think you have the number.
I'm on the line.
I can't hear you at all.
Yeah.
Ronan, you're telling me she's on, but I don't hear her. Can you try again, Nicole? You know what? I think it's on my end. I think I had something muted. Nicole, can you try calling back in? I'm sorry. Oh, such is the...
Can you confirm?
Hello? Ah, I have you.
Hi,
can I hear you.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Yes.
How are you?
I am okay. Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay, you know, one day at a time. I have some questions for you. The first one is, I know that.
Hello?
Hello?
But I can't. Hi, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. So I was saying I tend to, like, I know a lot of it is habit, but I tend to crave dessert after dinner at night before bed. And I go for, like, ice cream or, I mean, it's Halo Top. It's, like, protein ice cream. But still, I, like, want something sweet. And I'm wondering what that.
Nicole,
that when you're turning to food, yeah.
Your voice kind of goes in and out, but I heard that you said you're having a Halo type ice cream. What is that about that you want it? Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Now I can hear you. Yes.
Okay.
So
I was saying that late at night, like I know late at night I crave something sweet, and I know some of it is habit, but I want a piece of chocolate covered almonds or something like that. And I know that maybe I'm turning away from something if I'm turning to food, but is that comfort? Am I looking for comfort? What is that really?
Well, it might be different at different times. So I have a few thoughts. One is that wanting dessert is not, there's not, we have dessert for a reason, right? We have our meal and then we have dessert often. We keep getting something.
Oh, yeah.
Someone keeps getting into our call. Are you there?
Hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
I'm
okay.
Here.
Is that any better?
Well, so far, as long as someone else doesn't pop into our call like they were. But so first of all, it is not, there's nothing wrong with wanting dessert. If you have if you have some idea that you shouldn't want dessert, there goes the appearance of the anticipation of deprivation. And when we tell ourselves we shouldn't have something or we can't have something, of course, that's when we want it more. So there's a difference between I had a meal and now I want a little something for dessert. Sometimes you're going to have it, sometimes you're not going to have it, and sometimes you're going to have ice cream, and sometimes you'll have fruit or something. So to watch out for the sneaky elements of deprivation, which can occur where you don't think, you don't really recognize that you have a deprivation mindset, but I feel like there's embedded in your question the sense that you shouldn't want dessert, and therefore you do want dessert. Now, so that's one part. The late at night craving something sweet, chocolate covered almonds would indicate something with a crunch. Maybe there's some kind of frustration that might be getting expressed, or if you weren't thinking about the chocolate covered almonds on some particular night, what would be on your mind?
Well, it's not the chocolate covered almonds that I really want. It's just something sweet. So I What would be on my mind? Yeah, I guess maybe I'm turning away from like stuff with my family and like them feeling uncomfortable with me living with my boyfriend and just not kind of want not I haven't addressed it, and I know that I have to be assertive in my communication and just express and communicate, you know, how it makes me feel and why I've made this decision and why I think it's best for me, and also respect their discomfort with it. So I think that I'm just kind of avoiding that because I don't know how it's going to go. So maybe I'm looking to the dessert for comfort and to just make me feel better. Yeah, I guess I
Yes.
answered it.
And also, perhaps it's painful or upsetting that your family is not supportive or is, from what you've said on previous calls, is very suspicious of this boyfriend or not really on board with you being happy and imposing some, to me, rather antiquated ideas about this. So maybe there's something painful and upsetting gets expressed in, I want something sweet. You would like the sweetness of their support.
That makes sense. That makes sense. The sweetness of the support. Absolutely. That totally resonates. You always hit the nail on the head. What's new? I'm not surprised. So yeah, that is kind of it. And then that's really helpful. Wow. So yeah, I guess I just need to have that conversation. And it's my mom's birthday on Friday in like 2 days. So I feel like I need to talk to her before then. And then also, yeah, I guess just allowing, I think the difficult part is also telling myself not to have it. So that makes me want it more. So how do you just tell yourself you can have it? Like, how do you actually allow yourself to have it? And I know with the peanut butter, I had to work really hard on that, but it's like, how do you just allow yourself to have it? I know it's hard.
Well, first, are you talking about dessert?
Dessert, anything. Like, for example, my boyfriend, we went grocery shopping and he bought this flax Raisin Bran flax cereal. I guess he wanted cereal like to just snack on sometimes. And I guess in my head, I always said like, don't have cereal because it's all carbs. Like, it's no protein, it's just all carbs. So, and I told him that as a kid, we were talking about what cereals we liked as a kid, and I said I liked Raisin Bran. So he brought Raisin Bran because he knew that I liked it.
Oh,
And so
sweet.
yeah, so like I know, so thoughtful. So I kept telling myself, don't eat the Raisin Bran. So I
Okay.
had a little bit of it, yeah, and it was so good. And then I just kept eating it. And I
Yes,
had it for dinner too.
you kept eating it because you think you can't have it, and we want the thing that we think we can't have. Why do you think you can't have it? Because of some idea that it's full of carbs and you shouldn't have it. These food rules have to be challenged. These food ru rules have to be challenged. Remember the story I've told several times about my daughter and Halloween, my younger daughter? Yes, because she could have it, she could think about, did she want it or not? And when she was hungry, and my husband said, have some candy, you have a king size pillowcase full of candy, like you're hungry, have a chocolate bar. She said, no, I want real food. While her friend, who was told she could only have two pieces, was
Had all of it,
eating
yeah,
it like
wanted all of it,
crazy. So that's, to answer your question, how do you give yourself permission? You challenge the rules that are in place that you've taken as realities that say you can't have it. You can't have something that's like a healthy breakfast cereal like Raisin Bran is off limits because it has carbs. Where did you get the idea that carbs are bad? By the way, if we went back in time, I don't know, was it the 90s that it was all about carbs? All carbs, no fat. Don't eat fat. Don't eat protein. Don't, right? It was so these fads. And I'm telling you, in another 10 years, it'll be only eat pasta because these things go in cycles. So, the reason that you think that you can't have carbs is because someone sold you that idea. And that idea is not true. We need a variety of foods. And right? So and then the reason you couldn't stop eating it is because you think you shouldn't have it, so you want it more. Remember, a long time ago you called me and told me that you had gone to a restaurant, a Greek restaurant. And you couldn't stop eating, and it was because it was yummy. And you were just eating a bunch of non-palatable, bland food.
Right.
So of course, when you went to this dinner, of course you couldn't stop because it was so good. We have to enjoy food, not just. In fact, people say, "What are your rules for food?" And one of my rules is there are no rules. Of course, with my autoimmune condition, now there are rules, but essentially. My one rule is, if it's not yummy, if it's not really good, I'm not going to eat it. I have to like it. I have to like it. If I don't like it, I'm not going to eat it.
Yeah.
So should
I
be
love
good.
That. Yeah. So my boyfriend made a smoothie this morning. So we woke up at 5:30 and went to do yoga at the park together. And then we came back, and he usually makes a smoothie after working out, and he decided to put cereal in the smoothie. And so I didn't like the crunch that the cereal added to the smoothie. And I was also like, oh my God, this is adding so many calories to the smoothie. So I asked him to make me some, but I didn't know he was going to put cereal in it. So then I told him I'm not going to eat it. And he's like, is it the taste or the calories? And I said, both. So is that weird or no? Because if it didn't taste good to me, that's not weird, right?
If it didn't tastes good, you say, I don't really like I don't like this texture.
The
smoothie to be smooth. I want my smoothie smooth,
texture.
Not crunchy.
Yeah.
But you
but
have
that's
this
not
idea.
Weird, right?
What's weird? How do you define weird?
Like weird as in like he thinks I have some sort of eating disorder or something because I think the smoothie has too many calories and I don't want to eat it because it's too many calories to consume in a smoothie.
You are too much in your head and not enough intuitively eating. You have these shoulds.
Okay.
It's one thing to just say, hey, I don't really like my smoothies with a crunch. It's another thing to say, oh, but I can't have those calories. So preoccupied with calories, and remember why you're preoccupied with calories. Let's bring it back to the root, right? The root issue, which is that is the shame that you felt as a kid when you were overweight. And you've equated that with, if you have too many calories and you gain weight, you will bring shame upon yourself. Never mind that your mother is fond of the expression that, you know, she feels so much shame for eating. Yeah. She should have been dead in a coffin with dirt on her head. So remember what is driving this anxiety, which is a fear that if you gain weight, you will be unlovable somehow, not good enough. And that is the source of this preoccupation.
Okay. That's helpful. Absolutely.
So you got to remember that and challenge the food rules.
Okay. I'm going to write that, challenge the food rules and challenge the food rules and eat intuitively.
Well, and remember, instead of should I have this, which is
Do I feel like?
What does my body need right now?
Okay, what does my body need right now? Does my body need right now? Okay.
And at the root of this is what is driving this fear is a fear that gaining weight will cause you to be unlovable and not good enough because that's how you felt as a kid.
How does that help what's going on right now?
Because you have to know why you're so preoccupied, why you're so obsessed. When you say, oh my God, I just can't have that many calories, like, oh no, I'm freaked out. Then you're just in a freaked out place. But when you say, oh, wait, Why am I so freaked out about calories? Oh, right. I'm afraid of gaining weight. Why am I afraid of gaining weight? Because I'm afraid that if I gain weight, I will experience the shame I felt as a kid.
Okay.
Let me challenge that.
I love that. Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Nina. I am beyond grateful for you.
You are very welcome. Stay safe and healthy. This is not a time to ease up on anything. So take good care of yourself and be well.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you so much.
Bye for now.
Okay. Bye.
There's always a root cause. I've been talking with Nicole for a long time now. It's like 2 years she's been calling me consistently. And it was a long time in before she just sort of spontaneously said that when she was a kid, she'd been overweight and she didn't feel like her mother loved her, essentially, didn't accept her. And that was really the core of what was behind her fear of gaining 2 pounds, 3 pounds, or anything else. This sense that that weight was tied to her lovability and that with weight came shame. And the same thing with Nick. Nick, boy, I hope you're still listening to the show, and I'd love for you to call in if you are listening. But Nick was very preoccupied with weight, and same thing, weight as a child. He'd been overweight. In high school, he'd been overweight. And any time the scale went up, it was as if the shame went up too. When you deal with the shame and you heal the past and you realize that there was no shame, you're not less than or not good enough or unlovable because of the number on the scale, then things change in the present. When you heal the past, you change the present. So back to the article. Right now, what we have are words. One of the reasons we avoid conversations about grief is because it tends to make us feel helpless, and nobody likes feeling helpless. When we feel helpless, we tend to do things to make the other person's pain go away so that we can stop feeling helpless. This is why, she says, in the face of pain, people so often give unsolicited advice or try to dismiss pain by saying, it could be worse, or everything happens for a reason. It lets us skirt feeling helpless. Even in the way the author first brought up her own pandemic-related grief, she dismissed it in a way. She said she was sad, but at least she had a schedule that could, in theory, let her write. What if she didn't need the at least? What if she didn't need to try to brush away what she felt by also explaining why she shouldn't feel as she did? That's a little bit of a convoluted sentence, so I'm just going to go on. It's possible to use words to listen, Ms. Devine says. Grief can't be fixed, but it can be acknowledged. And acknowledgement is the best medicine. I'm going to take a pause here to remind you of my way of coping, my acronym for how to cope, how to comfort yourself when you need comfort. VARY, which stands for validate, acknowledge, and reassure yourself. The validate and acknowledge, really acknowledge should come before validation, but that did not work for my acronym, so they kind of go together. Acknowledgement is powerful. When you say to yourself, yes, I feel helpless and stuck and just hopeless about the future. This is scary. This is terrible. You say, of course you feel this way. How could you not? How could you not feel this way given the situation that you're in? And then the reassurance is this will end. We don't know when, and part of the problem is the uncertainty. We don't know when, but we do know it will end. It will stop. We will be back out of our houses. We may not be back to normal the way that we were before this happened for quite some time, if ever, but we will not be quarantined and we will not be isolated. This will end. So that is to acknowledge and validate and reassure yourself. Acknowledgement is powerful. Back to the article. Acknowledgement is the best medicine. It seems like it's too simple to be helpful, she says, but it's actually often the only thing that works for others, but for ourselves too. With our own grief, Ms. Devine advises that we take time to check in with ourselves, to slow down, to name our pain, not to fix it, since it likely can't be fixed, but to notice it. It is true that in the midst of a pandemic, finding this kind of focus might be challenging. Anika, gosh, I'm going to butcher her name. Anika Sridharan? Anika. I'm just going to call her Anika or Annika. Looks like it's Annika. She is a clinical psychologist and social worker at Partnerships for Trauma Recovery, a Berkeley, California organization that works with asylum seekers and refugees from 45 countries. She notes that in a situation of insecurity, such as what the world is facing now, it can be difficult to attend to mourning and grief while we're also anxious and afraid. Things are not as usual now. It's normal and natural to not be able to just go on as usual. The last time the author suddenly found herself in a state of deep grief, utterly unable to go on as usual, she was 17. One day she lost the all-consuming faith she'd grown up in, with a Christian God she'd loved so much she intended to become a pastor, a woman of God. Just like that, the world she'd known shifted, cracked open, and fell apart. She lost a faith, a vocation, a community, and salvation all at once. And for some time, she felt as if she might be the loneliest person alive. She wasn't, though, nor is she now. Coronavirus grief is already a vast, monstrous grief, its reach and breadth expanding daily. It's also a collective grief, a worldwide loss that, physically isolated as so many of us have to be, a lot of people are in one way or another also mourning. And she hopes in this extraordinarily difficult time to be better than she's been at letting herself mourn. Then she starts at the beginning. This is hard. I hurt. If you're hurting too, you're not alone. I think that bears repeating because her words echo with my words. What she said echoes what's in my heart. This is hard, and I am hurting. And if you're hurting too, you're not alone. So if you would like to share what's hurting you, if you would like to just express whatever is going on, troubles shared or troubles halved, as the saying goes, give me a call, 818-602-4929. Because by sharing your pain, it does alleviate it. By being heard, that helps. And that is something for you to do. If you're not going to call me, call someone else. Call someone who cares about you. Call someone who you know will listen. There's someone out there. And even if you don't think there is anyone, join my Dr. Nina's Food for Thought community on Facebook. There's over 600 people there. We are there to hear each other, to listen, to express, to provide support, understanding, and comfort. So instead of turning to food for relief, turn to a person. And if there's absolutely nobody there, comfort yourself. Validate, acknowledge, and reassure yourself. You're going to get through this. It's going to be okay. But right now, it's really hard. It's both. It's hard. It's really hard. And it's going to get better. All right. The second article I want to bring to you is from the New York Times also. It's called Grieving the Losses of Coronavirus. I think I have a caller. Hello?
Hey, Dr. Nina. This is Barbara. How are you?
Hi, Barbara. Welcome to the show. How are
Thank
you doing?
Thank you so much. I'm good. I've actually been emailing you and I'm reading your book, and it's this show, I just turned on to it. I think I was a few minutes late, but the grief part hits really. First of all, I'm going to start your program. I've got to. But the grief part on top of the coronavirus with me, I lost my dad 8 months ago and I lost my horse. I'm going through different kind of grief, grieving anyway. So, and then the coronavirus stuff, it's overwhelming. It's like, you know, give me the row of the Oreo cookies and the bag of the Chips Ahoy. And it's like overwhelming. I'm blessed in a lot of ways. Other ways, like being off and having some funds, unemployment for that and things. But it's just, it's so overwhelming. It's like, okay, how do I breathe? How do I even start? As I said, I'm going to start your program.
Oh,
how do
that's
I
very
even
kind.
Start dealing with it? It's frozen. I'm frozen. It's like, okay, what do I do?
You do with it. So you know, you mentioned rows of Oreo cookies, and sometimes when there's nothing that we can do about loss, about a virus, about losing a parent, a horse, people we love, horses are people too.
That was traumatic. It's like a pet's death is just different. It's weird. So
it's beyond painful. It's a loss of just a pure love. So there's the helplessness about it, that sometimes we eat cookies or a row of Oreo cookies as a way of comforting ourselves, but it's also a way of displacing lack of control to control. So not that we consciously think of it this way, but it goes from, I'm so powerless to do anything about these losses, this pain, this helplessness, it's too much, to, but I can eat or not eat those cookies. How could I have eaten those cookies? Right? It goes from something you can't control to something you can control, as well as provide a way of escape and comfort. Food is comfort. Oreo cookies are comforting.
Mm-hmm.
So it's both. It's a way of expressing comfort, but it's also a way of displacing a sense of helplessness to cookies, from the helplessness of loss to the sense that maybe you can do something about cookies.
Yeah. I liked what you said about the anticipation of deprivation, because I'm sitting there going, I know I shouldn't do this. I know I shouldn't do this. This is, but right now I can barely breathe and this is what's helping.
Okay. So you're talking about two different things. The anticipation of deprivation is, I can't have that. I can't have that. And of course, if I told you not to think about penguins, what's going to be on your mind? If I said, Barbara, you can't think about penguins the rest of the day, I'm pretty sure there's a penguin in your head right now. But you can't, when someone says you can't have that, we want what we think we cannot have.
Yeah.
So part of it is we set ourselves up. I'm not going to have those cookies. Yes, I am. I'm going to have them because that's the only thing that helps. And after I have these, I'm not going to have them again until I lose X many pounds. And then you're in a position where, you know, you've eaten the cookies because you say that you can't have them. You've eaten more of them than you might ordinarily because, again, anticipation of deprivation. You're not going to be able to have them until later, so you might as well have more now. So that's the anticipation of deprivation and how it messes with our minds and makes us have more, because we think we can't have it later. The other is coping strategies. When you are dealing with an overwhelming amount of grief and uncertainty and loss, and the only thing that helps right now is cookies, then be kind to yourself. Right? You don't yet have a new strategy. So binging on cookies is different from having some cookies, of course. Right? So acknowledging that even what you're feeling before you go to cookies is important. And being, what would you say to a friend who lost her dad and her horse in the space of some months? Would you say, have some Oreos?
Probably, yeah. Whatever makes you feel good.
Okay, but what if there were no, what if there were no Oreos and she just, your friend just said, well, I just want to talk. What would you say to your friend?
I would say, yeah, let's talk. Definitely.
And then what would you say to her?
I would say, be kind to yourself. You've been through a lot, and whatever right now, whatever is going to help you through this is what you need to do. Do you need to love yourself?
Okay. So what if you talk to yourself that way and said, we're kind, we're compassionate, and maybe there's some other way that you'll come up with dealing with the feelings other than cookies or food, but to start by being nurturing and comforting and kind to yourself, because that in itself is a way of soothing your pain.
Yes, definitely. I'm really bad about them. That's one thing you and I have to work on together. I'm very compassionate to other people, but not myself. And that's childhood stuff. That's a whole bunch of other issues.
Yes.
Right now, coping. You're right. I need to. I'm going to make a point of doing that.
Make sure when you're reading my book, read the chapter on making peace with food and yourself, and really focus on that, because there are strategies in there to help you. And by the way, listeners, Barbara's a member of the Food for Thought community. So join Barbara and join me in the group, because using that group, Barbara, use the group, put it out there. Hey, I am struggling. And the more that we allow ourselves to be vulnerable, because we're all vulnerable right now. We're always vulnerable, but especially now. So I hear often of people who treat themselves the way they were treated. And I don't know if that's true of you or not, but perhaps treat themselves the way they were treated, but treat other people the way they would have liked to be treated.
And
the good news here, Barbara, is that you have that ability to be kind and nurturing, that it's just being directed at other people right now. But the good news is it's there. Just have to find a way to direct it towards yourself.
Oh my gosh, that is so helpful. I will say though, having this time, because I typically work two jobs, having this time, I realize in my head, I am going to take care of myself. I am going to, this is where I'm starting, reading your book and praying a lot and your talk show, because typically I'd be at work and I wouldn't be able to listen to it. So I feel very fortunate that I'm able to actually just sit here and participate. So, and I'm taking notes on everything you just told me, and I am going to read this chapter. And by the way, everybody, this book is incredible. I sit there and highlight and I read it over and over again. I'm like, this woman rocks. She's a godsend. So,
oh, that makes me so happy. That is.
And I sometimes when I can't sleep at night, I will listen to your other shows, and the grief part really hit me hard, because I've just, I haven't figured out how to deal with it. It's actually hitting me now more than it did when it happened. So, I mean, I'm okay, but it's just the food and the stuff. So I will, everything that you just told me, I'm going to start. First, I'm going to start being kind to myself. So
that is everything. Because when we are kind to ourselves, we can respond to ourselves. We can talk to ourselves. Turning to a row of Oreo cookies is abandoning ourselves, right? So, Barbara, yeah. Stay with yourself. When you turn to cookies, yes, it may be the thing that helps, and it's okay. Have it. You're going to learn a new way. You're not going to always turn to cookies. But
Thank you so much.
Do so with compassion.
Okay.
And
compassion
hope.
And kind to myself. And yes. Stay with myself. I learned that. I'm going to write that on my mirror. Stay with myself.
Yes.
Thank you
stay.
So much.
Oh, thank you so much for calling and let me know how it goes. Call back.
I got to actually talk to you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Take good care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Aw, well, that made my heart warm. That's a birthday present for me. So in terms of grieving, what to do? There is, you know, there's such a sense of loss. We are grieving the loss of life. Some people, our jobs, the losses of weddings, sports, the ability to go to a show, a play, to go to a friend's house. We're mourning the loss of the ability to get a haircut. And let's not even talk about my roots. Oh my goodness. There's so many losses. There are so many losses that are big and small. And no matter what those losses, here's some steps to help navigate it. Again, number one, acknowledge the grief. Acknowledge it. Grieving requires us to sit with pain, to feel a kind of sadness that we don't want to feel. We want to get rid of it. And that's where food comes in. It takes us away. It takes us away from the sadness, the anxiety, the discomfort. And it takes us away, but it's also an abandonment, as I was telling Barbara, it's an abandonment of self. So we need to acknowledge what we're feeling and the intensity of what we are feeling. And we need to stay in the present too, because sometimes when we have losses or we're going through ambiguity and uncertainty as we are now, it feels like it could last forever. And then you have real feelings about the present. Oh no, we're going to be here for another 2 years. Ah, and you grieve those 2 years and you feel anxiety about a future that has not happened and hopefully will not happen. So stay in the present, which is another way of staying with what is rather than going to what if. And just recognize that grief is something that shows up in different ways for different people. Some people turn to Oreos. Some people isolate. Some people need to turn to others. Just trust yourself to know what is right for you and honor that. But make sure that you stay with the feelings that you're having, whatever they are. And grief is grief, you know, the stages of grief, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, denial, which is rampant in our society right now. Denial, we're fine, we can go back to work, but enough of that. Denial, anger, bargaining. Well, if I just do this, then that. Denial, anger, bargaining, depression, sadness. Oh, this is so sad. This is so depressing. It's terrible. And then eventually acceptance. Those are the stages of grief when it comes to the death of somebody, but they also relate to the losses that we are experiencing. So give yourself some grace. This is hard. we're all hurting. And
you're listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.